Good afternoon, Mood Group friends, and welcome back to another episode of Packaging Perspectives brought to you from Mood Group. I'm very proud and pleased to say that today we have a very special guest on our show, Mazen Barakat. He is the new Chief Industrial Officer of E7 Group. We know Mazen very well because we were the company that was responsible for introducing him to his new role at E7, which we'll hear a little bit more about later on in the podcast. But when I met Mazen during the process of selection for the role, what fascinated me was Mazen's career and the different companies he's worked at and the experiences he's had, both in FMCG brands and in manufacturing and across different countries. And I said to Mazen at the time, I said, it would be very interesting if we could have you on as a guest to share some of your pearls of wisdom with our audience. So welcome to the podcast, Mazen.
Thank you, Marcus. It's a pleasure to be with you. And it was a pleasure working with you over the past few months as well.
Pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's all mine. We all start our careers out. We all have often a sort of similar background in terms of we all go to primary school and secondary school, and some of us go to university, some of us go to college, whatever. But we all start more or less in a similar sort of track. But as we know, the twists and turns of life, people's careers take different paths. And I particularly see all those different paths in my role as an executive search partner. And I always think it's interesting to find out from people how they went the path they did and what they would recommend. So starting with the choice of degree that you chose for, how did that come about? Is there any backstories to that?
Of course. You're taking me way back. So originally, I wanted to be a doctor, to be precise, a heart surgeon.
Wow. Okay?
So that was the original thing. And I actually, when I was in middle school, I started getting biology books and anatomy books and started moving in that direction. And then I had a cousin who went into med school. And I saw how much effort he put in studies. And he's like now a university professor, and he's a great guy, but the amount of dedication to study that he put in was not something that I was willing to do. And also I was not willing to be a mediocre doctor.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, obviously this is not for me. And that helped me in a way shape my whole future years, because I remember as a kid, and I couldn't really articulate that, I sat down in my room and I thought, so this doesn't work. Why did I want to be a doctor? And it was not to help people. I was not an angel. It was to get a certain status as a kid. Doctors are looked up to. And we had Magdi Ya'oub, the famous Egyptian heart surgeon. In England.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a role model to me growing up, what he managed to do.
Yeah.
And for some reason, which is very strange as a kid looking at the kids these days, I wanted to have financial independence. So I wanted a good paying job. And if you are a good doctor, you have that covered.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking, okay, I will not be a doctor because I am not willing to give up 15 years of my life to studying to be a good doctor.
What age were you roughly when you drew up this list? I'm just intrigued.
15?
15, 16. It shows to your character, doesn't it? I mean, we'll come on to this later on in terms of your career, what you do. But it shows that you were of that mindset already at that stage.
Actually, not 15, 14.
14.
14, because that was the time I'm choosing whether I go full science or mathematics in high school. So yes. 14.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So what's the next best thing? Engineering. Then I go to engineering.
Okay.
Now, engineering is another story. So, because following the same thing, what do I want to study in engineering? I wanted to have a versatile thing that doesn't limit me to the field itself. So computer science was high in demand at the time I was in university, but it's computer science. Civil engineering, it's about building and stuff. So I had a choice between electrical engineering or mechanical engineering. I couldn't really do neat engineering drawings, so I wouldn't be good in mechanical engineering. So that left electrical engineering. So that's how the degree was chosen for me.
Chosen. That's good. A good story. Very, very good. Yeah. Love it. So from there, I know you went to Schneider straight out of university, from my recollection. Correct me if I'm wrong. Why Schneider? What was it? What was the pathway there?
There's a year after graduation that you missed. And again, when I went to university, I was not a very good student, okay? Not really. So I said, okay, mediocrity is not a good thing. What do I need to do to make sure that I land a good job when I graduate? So the key thing was internships. So the first year of university, I had an internship with ABB. The second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, because I wasn't a good student, so I spent 7 years instead of five, which is, okay, call it 6 years instead of five. The second, third, and the fourth years, I was having internships at Procter & Gamble.
Right.
Okay. And in my internships, it's not like you go look, see, and watch. I actually had projects to deliver. And proudly, some of them are actually still working until today. And interestingly, one of them was the first application of radio frequency identification tags in Egypt. So it went a full cycle from the introduction to RFID in probably 99. And I was doing experimental work with it for Procter & Gamble until today, when it's the bread and butter of security printing, where I am currently working. So you never know. So then after school, I had a job offer from Procter & Gamble, but then they were going through restructuring. And my dad had this practice of engineering consultancy. So I went and worked with him for a year. I didn't like it. You know, me and my dad, we get along well in life, but not at work. We are from two completely different schools. And then he said, why don't you apply for Schneider? So I went and I applied for the job. They took me there, spent a year there. And the choice of Schneider was not a good choice for me.
Okay.
Because this is when I knew engineering jobs are boring to me. I'm not cut out for this. It's too technical and it doesn't have enough people interaction.
Right.
Or it's focused on sales, and I cannot sell. So it's either design, or sales. And both of them were not me. So I spent a year in Schneider, didn't like it. And during that time, because I didn't like it, it was 2002 to 2003. And at that time, there was a huge recession in Egypt. There was a devaluation of the currency. There was boycotting of all sorts of Western goods, which caused the economy to recess. the job opportunities in Egypt were not good. So I went on and I applied for immigration to Australia.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because if I'm not happy where I am, and if I can't find the right opportunity for me in this place, I would go find it elsewhere.
Okay.
But in the middle of the process, Procter & Gamble came back knocking. And I said, okay, let's go. And that's how I moved on from Schneider to Procter & Gamble.
Wasn't there some story about also you were delivering something for a friend or something to Procter & Gamble? Or am I mixing that up? No, I'm mixing that up. No. I'm mixing that up with somebody else. There was something, another story similar to something like that. So the world of Procter & Gamble then, one of the largest companies in the world, your introduction to people, consumers, brands.
Yeah.
So what was the first step? What did you learn from it? Where did you go?
The first step, these were really, really good times. And I think I had a couple of roles that I would say, I'm not sure which role is better, this or that. And my first role in Procter & Gamble was one of those. It was called process engineer, but it was actually doing maintenance, process, working closely with R&D on new formulations for the products, working with marketing on meeting consumer demands that were done via consumer panels and stuff, and managing a team of six, which was, for me, amazing. So I get to do a lot of thinking, redesigning of the technology, work with people, work with the market, and feel the, what do you call it, the pump or the hype of being exposed to R&D and talking to R&D directors and all that kind of stuff as a young kid. And the environment was really, really stressful, but super encouraging and super exciting to be there. And in this year and a half that I did the process engineer work, I had one of the really, really most influential managers of my career. He taught me things that I still teach people today, and I still do up until this moment, and it sticks. And that guy has been one of my best so far.
That's nice to hear. And it's just to track back, and you said Procter & Gamble came knocking. It's a good example to people of, you know, just because there's you wanted to go there after university, but as you said, they weren't ready for you then, but never give up. There's always an opportunity later on down the road. Keep your relationships. You never know what might happen.
Keep the relationship is the most important thing, because if you close a door, it will not be open. But if you leave it ajar, then it's not closed. And if there's an opportunity, you will be among the people considered.
Yeah.
Never leave on a bad note. That's the key thing.
Wise advice. Yeah. And in fact, in the course of this podcast, anything that you would pass, I always say to people, if you were to talk to your younger self again, or you're talking to somebody else and saying, learn from me, learn from what I've learned, anything that you would put forward like that is greatly appreciated by me and all our audience.
For the younger me, I would say less assumptions. Don't assume that the people understand what you're thinking without properly articulating it. Because as I grew older, I found out that proper articulation is not an easy thing. It's a skill, and you need to train for it, how to say the right things the right way to achieve the right end in mind. Because you might have all the good intentions in the world, yet you come across the wrong way because you didn't say the right things to the right people. So take it easy. Not everybody understands what you have in your mind, and use your words. That's what I would say.
And thank you for that. And I would also add in, with my knowledge of your background, you're often talking about communicating to a variety of nationalities. We're not just talking about one nationality. And sometimes things can get lost in translation, can't they? And therefore, we need to be even more sensitive to that situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the tricks is to ask the person to confirm what he received from you. I'm not particularly fond of asking people, can you please reiterate what I said to me, or say it again, or to make sure, but sometimes it's really needed, especially when English is not your first language, is not my first language, and probably you're coming from India or Nigeria or Switzerland even, and Egypt. So little things make a difference.
I agree. Yeah, it's a technique I use with my 14-year-old son sometimes. You know, right, that's can you problem. Repeat back to me? Do we understand each other?
That's the problem. It's good to use with kids. It's somehow when you use with grown-ups.
Yeah. I suppose the thing is, I mean, we're all dealing in quite serious stuff, aren't we? And if we want to avoid disappointment and an outcome that's not what we need, then yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Absolutely.
So Procter & Gamble took you to various countries in various roles without, you know, chapter and verse on each one. What would you generally say the experience was like, and what did you take from it?
Well, working for a big company opens doors and opportunities. And at the same time, it could kill opportunities. That's how I say about it. So I'll maybe say one or two stories. So
after
the process engineer role, I was the fastest promoted person in Procter & Gamble Egypt at the time, from what they call band one to band two, 19 months. So after 18 months, the engineering director of the site came to me. I said, Mazen, I have an opening in my department, and I would like you to consider a move. He didn't tell me I was going to be promoted or anything, but he said, I would like you to consider the move for your next assignment. I don't know when, but consider. And then, so I went to my manager. I told him, listen, Maggot came to me and he said this and this and that. He said, yeah, good. I know he came to you, but I have another offer for you. I want to keep you in operations. Nice. Now, in the greedy nature of people, well, this guy likes me. I want the other guy to like me. And I want to learn another skill and. But here's the tricky part. I am not a good engineering person. And I knew that because engineering people work with drawings, work with numbers, work with tables, less team, no daily activities, not the things that make me tick.
Yeah.
So at that time, surprisingly, I told the guy, the engineering guy, listen, Megan, I don't think I can do what you expect of me. This is not my forte. And I don't think I'm the right person for that role. So he took it nicely, and then I got promoted into operation and I had fun and everything. But when I look back, had I gone to that engineering role, probably I would have been less successful in the following years, and I would have lost the perception that I built, because I would be doing something that I don't like and I don't feel good at. Maybe I'll be performing in a satisfactory manner, but it's not to the maximum of my potential, definitely. So self-awareness is really, really important while choosing where to go. So you will have, in a big company like P&G, you will have a lot of opportunities. You have to choose, and the choice is not, should not be based on the short-term gain, but on the longer-term gain and based on your assessment of your internal capabilities.
And again, again, another example of your strategic thinking. I know that that's what's brought you to where you are today. So I can link it. I'm linking it all the way back down to these early stages of your career.
So that was another thing. And actually, I wouldn't call it strategic thinking. And I would want to link back things to having a clear long-term objective. So as I told you, when I was 14, I had something. This vision kept on developing with me until maybe I was 25, 26, and then it was 70, 80% complete, and it still is with me today. So every time I ask myself, is what I'm doing fitting towards this vision? Is it one step on the road, or is it a misdirection? If it's a misdirection, I say no. If it's on the road, I say yes. If it's a little bit of a detour, but in the same direction for a little bit more fun, so be it. A little bit delay for a little more fun, that's a good trait. So Stephen Covey said it one in his book. You start with the end in mind. First thing is to define where you want to be in how long, and then work towards it.
Yes. Yeah, a bit like having an MIS system, isn't it? You know, there's no, yeah. there's no point in getting to the end of the year and not being where you want to be. You know, it shouldn't be a surprise. You should have all the data and the information coming to you. Exactly the same thing. Yeah, the end in mind. Yeah.
And then the other thing that company like Procter & Gamble gives you is exposure to the world. And when I say the world, I mean to the people of the world. So if I look at the number of nationalities that I had to work with, I cannot count them. People from everywhere, from China to Brazil, we've worked together. And it strikes you that no matter how different we are, or we think we are, human beings are all the same. The triggers might be different, but humans are similar.
Yeah.
If you look at relationships across the world, for instance, mother-in-law, son-in-law, it's a copy-paste with minor differences across the globe. Look at the father-daughter relationship. It's copy-paste.
Yeah.
So human beings all have the same feelings and all are pretty much similar. It's just the way they express themselves that might differ. But on the inside, it's the same. So, and once you know that, you peel the onion and talk to the inner person, then you reach the people. This was one of the most important things that I've learned by being in a multinational company.
Wise. Very wise, and must have changed your perspective on the world in such a huge way and an accelerated way, having originally started your life in Egypt, and now suddenly there's this global perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, and somewhere along the line, you got the opportunity to work outside of Egypt, as I recall. What was it like taking that decision for the first time? I remember what it was like for me, but what was it like for you?
No, for me, it was very easy. So here's the deal. I was working in Egypt, doing well. No, it was not like that, unfortunately. But here's the thing. I was doing really well, moving forward and doing great. And I get a request to move to Nigeria. So it's not a pleasant thing, but it ended up being one of my nicest, fondest memories of the time. The living conditions were not very nice, and I was going on a split family arrangement because it didn't make sense for my wife to come with me, which was the worst decision I've ever made. Split family most likely would cause families to split.
Yeah.
Luckily, we navigated through the hard times that followed regrouping together. But then I went to Nigeria. It was a good assignment in terms of work. But being away on split family was very stressful. And that assignment changed my whole perspective towards career.
Okay.
So actually, prior to this assignment, I would do anything to advance my career, regardless, because that was the top priority at the time. And after this assignment, well-being of me and my family became a close second or on equal footing with career advancements, because it's a hard place. Nigeria, back in time in 2013, I think, was a difficult place. So, so this was a perspective changer to me.
Good. So the balance that you took from it was that no job, however important strategically and within your career, is worth putting ahead of your family, within reason, because ultimately that's why we're doing it anyway, to help provide for our family. And I can completely understand and relate to that. I've always said to people that, you know, there are times when strategically you might go ahead, you know, you might go ahead for 6 months or a year or whatever whilst you're getting settled into the role, and the family will follow to coincide with maybe school years and also in the kind of roles that you're doing, you know, the first 100 days of, you know, coming in and change programs and things like that, it's often a benefit not to be trying to settle a family in parallel with that process.
Absolutely.
So you drew from that, and then back to Egypt, I think it was.
Back to Egypt on a location-free series of roles. So I went back to Egypt, and I've done two roles based in Egypt, but actually it was based nowhere. So I was handling the warehousing. There was a program to redesign the distribution network in India, Middle East, Africa.
Right.
So how to distribute P&G's product in these countries? What's the relationship with the distributors should be like in each country? What do we import? What do we manufacture locally? What are the inventories, shipping schedules, the whole nine yards? So
massive.
I was doing... Now that I explain it, it sounds massive.
It sounds huge. Where do you start?
So eventually I was in every country. So India, Nigeria, Saudi, UAE, Jordan, Pakistan, you name it. Looking at the supply chain, doing supply network designs with the teams there, talking to distributors, talking to the, if they are importing some products, talking to the manufacturing sites to look at the importation process and all that kind of stuff. So I was either on the couch at my home or in the plane or in a hotel. I've done that for 2 years. Delivered the design and the roadmap moving forward. Then, and this was the closing note, I was responsible for the contract manufacturing sites or co-manufacturing or whatever you call it. So Procter & Gamble in some countries, when they are testing the market, they get some of the local manufacturers, they contract them to manufacture P&G's product. And I was responsible on this manufacturing process.
Right.
So I had a site in Nigeria, site in South Africa, site in Egypt, site in Pakistan. So I was managing this. Again, they said, do you want to make this role from Dubai? I said, doesn't make sense. Why do I go to Dubai? I like Egypt. And I'll be traveling anyway 3 weeks every month. So it's extra cost for the company and it's less convenience for me. So leave me where I am. And they did. And then during that time, the plan was that Procter & Gamble would open 4 new sites in Iran. That was why I was brought into this assignment. So manage the existing 4, maybe small one or two more, plus the 4 sites in Iran. And then Trump came. For the first time. So the job was too small. And again, the company was going through another restructuring somehow. And I told them at that time, listen, guys, I have a team of 12. And I have a very bright young person under me. And with the current scope, I think he can do the job and the team of 12 need to be 5 or 6. So great idea. Move on. So the team became 5 and 6 and that brilliant guy and me. And then I called him, listen, guys, done. Now it's time for you to promote that guy and find me another job. And then for all the good and bad reasons, there was not a reasonable job. And I didn't want to wait. Now, looking back, had I waited a little bit longer, maybe things would have worked, but I'm happy it didn't because I started the next chapter and the next chapter was very nice and all of that.
And the next chapter was where you then joined Fine Paper Holdings. And yes. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, you knew somebody there that had been at Procter & Gamble that you would have worked with before, who knew of your abilities and wanted you on his team, and obviously you would have had to have interviewed for it and been considered amongst everybody else that would have been applying, but it shows a little bit of the pathway as to how that opened up for you.
Yeah, actually the guy was named Ian Robin, one of the nicest guys I worked with. Now he was the manufacturing capability director at Procter & Gamble when I was doing manufacturing capability for Nigeria site. And Nigeria was very low on the capability scale at that time. And Jan was giving them hard times. Then I came in to fix it. I fixed it in 18 months. So he came for the audit. He liked what he saw. And that's how we know each other. So I've met him during the P&G time, maybe 4 or 5 times, 2 audits, 1 visit, and 2 or 3 big meetings. That's it. But obviously he remembered. So when he went to Fine, we connected and he said, do you want to come? I said, yeah, perfect. Let's go.
I think there's a moral in the story, isn't there? And especially in like big companies like this, where it's not just what you do and how you do it, but the friends and the alliances you make on that passage, because those people move on. They go to other places. Yeah. And then you can sometimes follow, or they're like your sponsor. So that looking ahead and looking up the line, that's equally as important, isn't it? The friends that you make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it wasn't only Jan. So there were, as I was, I dare claim a good performer and a good guy. I had a few of those. So when rumor came out that I'm leaving, someone who has left, who was building a factory in Algeria said, Mezen, I need you there. Another guy said, there's an opportunity, a new site is opening in Ain Sukhna and we need someone to manage that. So yes, if you leave a good perception, and if you have a good reputation, and if you have decent relationships with people, it will help you move on, definitely.
And Jan had come into Fine Paper at a time where, I think if history is correct, Fine Paper had received some private equity investment, and the firm was being evolved under a new CEO, of which Jan mm-hmm. had come in, and he was then building his team with you. You spent some time there doing all the work that collectively all of you were doing and achieving. And then not so long ago, I came along and knocked on your door and said, Mazin, we've got this opportunity in Abu Dhabi. Can we have a chat? And I think the timing of it was right for a variety of reasons.
100% correct. And actually looking at it, because remember, I said, had I waited longer in Procter & Gamble, things would have been probably okay, and I would have been very, very satisfied. But I didn't, and I was kind of happy I didn't. Now, it's the same thing with Fine. Now, I had a beautiful arrangement with Fine Hygienic Holding. The job I could do, zero stress, nothing, easy. I know how to do it. I've done it before, been there, done that. I talk to the people, I get things done, zero stress, life is good. And I had the same arrangement of, because we had four sites and I was managing the capability of the four sites. So I had to travel a lot. I started off in Dubai for 2 years, then came COVID. Then I told them, listen, I have done a perfect arrangement before. I can be located in Egypt. I go to the site there for a week, a month, which is my normal visiting schedule. And I do my travel in the rest of the 3 weeks. And I have the weekends in Egypt, especially that at that time, my dad was not feeling well. And it was very nice to be there. So, and the company, again, saves on the housing. So they pay the salary, but they save some money. So it's a win-win for everyone. So I had a beautiful arrangement with them, and we were moving nicely.
And you had the same couch, so you could use that couch again.
Yeah, it was the same couch. I was looking to change it, actually.
Time for new couch.
But then you came along with E7, and in that transition, one, it's a better role. It's a more responsibility, direct, more exciting, a lot of things to do. I love the place. I love the company and the leadership team. It's beautiful. But more than this, in the transition period, normally you think, okay, I was so comfortable, on the verge of becoming complacent. Now, I have had, for me, Fine and complacency were on the path to the vision. It was not a divergent. I was moving in the right direction. But then E7, moving in the right direction with, how do you call it? It's like you're driving on the slow lane or on the highway, or on a scenic highway where you have nice scenery around. So E7 is a scenic highway because it reminded me, for instance, I've never told you this because it stopped to matter at some point in time, but now it matters again. I have an executive leadership diploma from E. Cornell University. Yeah. I was working on getting to be certified as a board member. But all these things just faded in the background with the complacency, I would say complacency of having a comfortable job. So as cliche as it might sound, well, the comfort zone is great, but don't stay there for too long, because if you stay there, if I had stayed in the comfort zone of Procter & Gamble, I wouldn't have reached E7. And if I stayed in the comfort zone of Fine, probably I would be somewhere else and, well, enjoy the comfort zone for a while. Do enjoy it because it's enjoyable. But then get out of it when you see a chance to go.
Yeah, and I think a comfort zone can almost slightly be like a rut. You know, you can do it with your eyes closed. You're running in that rut. But what somebody once said to me a long time ago, a rut is a shallow grave. And, you know, it can eat you up. You know, we know without a shadow of doubt the potential of the role that you have, the requirements, the size of it today and where it's going in the future, the significance of the group across the four disciplines that you're responsible, because it's like running four factories, isn't it? But they're all in one country at the moment until other plans come to fruition. And the enormity of the being part of a publicly listed company again, with the aspirations that go with that, as we know, of the backers. So very exciting times, I think. For us also, and the example to some of our audience that I wanted to show as well, is that in the selection of you and in the identification of you, the specification to me was to look outside of the box a little bit in terms of the type of person that the new CEO of E7 wanted in his new chief industrial officer. And it wasn't sort of bring me perhaps the stereotypical model that often one would see like that, but it was your scope of background, the engineering, the supply chain, the working for an FMCG, the contract manufacturing, all the principles and grounding that you'll have taken from all these different businesses across all the different geographies, shape you to be a very unique chief industrial officer at E7, which was what we wanted.
Well, I was very lucky to go through this. And again, there are always two choices. Either be too technically involved and develop a deep knowledge in a certain discipline, which is good. So you are the best printer in the world. You are the best paper maker in the world. You know it inside out. Or develop a breadth of knowledge to be able to navigate with your team. Because if you try to do it alone, you drown. Both models have their own merits and their own drawbacks, right? So my model is basically, okay, technical mastery is very important. But if you are high up in the leadership ladder, what you need is the technical mastery that allows you to ask the right questions to get the right answers. You don't need to know the answers, but you need to have the common sense to judge if this answer is right, or is it missing something, or is it absolutely off? And this doesn't need full technical mastery. It needs a little bit of breadth. Also, you need a little bit of common sense to be able to coach highly technical people on how to do their jobs better. Because in that way, what you do is you change the style, and your coaching style is becoming helping them to think rather than helping them to solve. So you ask a lot of whys and wheres and hows, and they come up with the answer and they're happy with themselves. And that's the way. So different people have different styles to suit their capabilities, and you need to choose that. If I'm highly technical person, I will tell people what to do because I know what needs to be done. Probably both people will deliver results if they are good people, but the styles are completely different based on the set of skills that each one has. And it's very important to, again, have the self-awareness to know which person you are, what sets of skills do you have, and to be intentional about how to use this combination to deliver the results. And intentional is key. So self-awareness, be intentional.
And I think, if I'm encapsulating it rightly, I think this demonstrates your strategic thinking, which right back at 14, you were already manifesting and showing. And right through to today, you're, as you say, you're good at stepping back, thinking about the situation, and enabling people to think that it was their idea, you know, how to provoke the thought. And more importantly, when we look at your group where you are now, the group is wanting to change. The group is wanting to run in a different style and a more 21st century way of doing things, rather than perhaps the typical way that the print or packaging group has worked in the past. So it's with that approach we get the results that we're looking for.
I am very hopeful that it works.
I'm sure it will, Mazen. I'm sure it will. Is there any, so if you were to sort of wrap up in a sort of to people coming into the industry or people that are making their way through the early stages of their career, are there any sort of tips or advice that you haven't already given in this podcast that you would say to people, do this, do that?
Well, I wouldn't tell people do this, do that, because every individual is different and every path is different. But I would reiterate a couple of things that I said. The first thing is always have a plan. So think with the end in mind, have a destination in your mind. Mm-hmm. The second thing is always have a plan B. So you're working on plan A, but at the same time you're working on plan B. So I never said told you this. When I was in engineering, I thought, okay, what if engineering doesn't work? I was learning the piano and I was planning, if engineering doesn't work, okay, so bollocks, I will be a music teacher and live a bohemian life with my dog and I'll be happy.
The first Egyptian Elton John.
Yeah, but then in order to be a music teacher, I had to study, and I was actually studying in the Royal Schools of Music of London.
Oh, wow.
So when you have a plan B, you go all the way in that plan B as if it's a plan A. So have a plan A, but also always have a plan B that is active. It's not in a drawer. You're working with it. And be intentional on what you do. Articulate, don't assume. And do your best. That's it. It's very simple.
Yes. Yeah. It sounds simple when you put it like that, doesn't it? Do you think, you mentioned about when you were choosing not to be a doctor and the reasons why, and you chose engineering, you didn't choose other opportunity things like banking or hospitality, rather you chose engineering. And then later on you said, my dad had an engineering consultancy business. Mm-hmm. Did that have any influence, do you think, at all, at a subconscious level?
Might be. But here's the thing. As a 14 years old, I was acing math and science, and that was what I liked. So math normally is engineering, and back in time in Egypt, banking was not going to lead to the financial independence, because banks were not investment banks, and credit cards were not even there, or it was very few credit cards at the time in the 1990s. So no, it was based on what I like, but also what is going to be more rewarding according to the standards of the life back then.
Yeah. You're very intuitive, Mazen, very, very well. You're a very humble person. I know you're a very humble person, and when we were preparing for this podcast, you demonstrated that yet again. But I think that there are very few people like you, actually, and there are very few people that have this strategic thinking and premeditation in the way that you do. And many congratulations. I'm sure our audience will find everything that you've said very interesting and very educational, and thank you.
You're very kind. Thank you for having me on, Marcus.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Mazen. Nice speaking to you again.
Thank you very much.